So what's good? We got a Rick Radio episode 35 or 36. Which one is it?
You know, 36. 36.
36. Okay, we got NFT stats on today. Punk 9059, I'm pretty sure it is.
Punk 9059, yeah, that's the one.
That sounds about right. We're waiting on Mando. Apparently he got stuck in traffic somewhere. Where is he? France or some shit?
Yeah, he's on holiday in France. And I guess he's stuck in traffic way back.
Classic excuse.
Yeah, he's probably just having a wank.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. Do you want to introduce the sponsors real quick before we get started with everything else?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Hey guys, as you know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit. One of the largest crypto casinos out there. You can do everything from sports gambling, casino games, NFT borrowing, lending, trading, and even crypto futures trading as well. So check out rollbit.com or rollbot.com depending on your jurisdiction. As usual, we'll have two codes to give away on this show. So the first code, and I'll put this on the YouTube stream, is NFT stats 1411. NFT stats 1411. And if you want to watch this show live on YouTube on video, check out the tweet that I'm about to pin in like 2 seconds to the space.
Yeah. So definitely comment, like, repost on that tweet, because last week we had somebody win, what was it, Ice Skin Pudgy Penguin worth like $100,000.
Yeah.
And RLD by OSF, which is like the key to getting all the airdrops. And that was like $17,000. So, I mean, finally, it's been 35 weeks or something, and people are finally winning some big prizes.
And last week was a big week, right? That was a massive week. I was just saying that last week was like the biggest week we've had in ages. Like
that was a massive week. I don't know how many are listening, but the odds are pretty good to win shit like this. So it's kind of surprising. And I mean, even if you weren't winning stuff, I don't know. We've had some pretty good guests with some pretty good things to say. And I think we have another one coming up today. Before we get into that, sorry, I'm paying like half attention right now just because there's that Binance news that just came out that, prosecutors could be charging the exchange. I don't know if that's really moving the markets right now. I mean, the markets are just down because equities are taking a little break after a very long parabolic run up. So any little bit of news might move things. I don't know. The markets tried to go up yesterday. They're back down today. We're just in the same range all the time. It's a day trader's personal hell unless you're a scalper. Then maybe you're crushing it. I don't know. But personally, I am not crushing it. I mean, I did well the past few days, so that was nice. I think I just saw Mando pop in here. I don't know what the hell happened. Yeah,
just disappeared again.
It's tough. Buddy.
It's tough now. There's nothing going on right now, is there? It's just like equities kind of feel like they're topping out here. Crypto's not really moving. Maybe like slow bleed lower. NFTs are dead. Shitcoins are punching around, but you know, obviously you can get like that bold thing was ridiculous. You can just get rugged like in a split second in shitcoins. So it's not like something you can spend your whole time on. So yeah, I don't know. It's just like, just feels like I'm going to go out there and enjoy summer, but I feel like we've said this every week during summer.
We say this weekly. I don't know who's Mike taking it well, so far.
Yeah.
There's Captain America Light, apparently. That's his new name.
Yeah, it was the last one. Like, for some reason, whenever I use Firefox, it just crashes at the moment. So, with StreamYard, but I'm here. I made it from the south of France. This is me, meant to be on holiday, but I showed up for the show. Couldn't miss it. Yeah, Are we still trading? We're still trading in this range, just fucking banging our head against the wall.
I mean, yeah, apparently, I don't know. I thought we were going to break out of the range yesterday. I actually got long pretty early because you know what I've been starting to do because I'm so stupid now and I don't know how to trade. I was like, man, yesterday morning looks like a short, so I'm going to buy it. I'm doing the inverse of myself. Did great. Made a lot. Got out because I was like, this is where I would hold. And I was like, you know what? That means I should sell. So I sold and then I flipped short today. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm back to printing money by just fading myself.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, are you fading yourself by being short today or should you be getting long right now?
Well, I'm sure. I mean, I've covered a lot. I know we just had that little news that just came out that we were talking about caused a little spike down. I don't know. And now we got equities looking like they topped. I don't know. I mean, top short term. It doesn't have to be like a long term top, but they're definitely rolling over a little bit. We got some big earnings tomorrow on deck with Amazon and Apple and whatnot.
The equities matter right now for crypto. It feels like the correlation is just like nothing.
The correlation doesn't really exist, but I think that, I mean, like, if equities start to actually go down, you would assume that crypto would probably go down a little bit as well. Just because, like, the risk asset thing, I don't think it's going to be inverse, right? I don't know.
I just don't know. Like, it seems its correlation with gold is much higher than it is with stocks right now. So,
what the fuck is gold doing? Let me type that up real quick. Gold. That's also going down. Dollar's going up. Rates are literally fucking flying all of a sudden. There's a little bit of canaries in the coal mine, it seems like, in my opinion. I mean, more than there has been. I think it's just, I mean, there's been a good run in equities. I don't know. It's time to probably be a little prudent and take some risk off. But if you're a long-term investor, you know, it is what it is. Don't make too many trades. That's how you get caught up in dumb shit. And then you find yourself inside next to the computer instead of outside in the beautiful weather. And you don't want that.
Right. We have a good guest today, I think. Obviously, like, everyone's seen him, like, on the timeline. I think NFT Stats has been someone that's kind of gone nuts over the last 12 months in terms of following. Obviously, went to go work at Proof, and I just thought he'd be a great guest for this current period of the NFT market, where it feels like everyone's not really trading that much, but just trying to see the trends, see what's see where you can actually make money in this market. And he seems like the perfect person to kind of track that sort of stuff. I don't know if we want to bring him up. Is he backstage?
Yeah, bring him in.
What's up, guys?
Oh, wow. Look at that. Look at that. A Dower Dossel in the background?
Dude, I got I have something like 35 of those. 27 ETH thrown into the ether, man.
It's like a wall of shame at this stage.
I have sold most of those. I'm not selling my Squiggle.
Squiggles, yeah, you don't sell Squiggles.
I'm not selling my Oddity because I work at Proof. I don't sell Proof NFTs. The Quirky's gonzo. The Azuki's gonzo. The Renga's gonzo. The Moonbird's still here.
Moonbird.
The Doodle and the Clone are gonzo.
Oh, really? Wow. So most of that wall is not, you don't even own them. Are you even allowed to do that? I thought that was like blasphemy in the NFT space.
I think I am breaking the Quirky's terms and conditions. So
yeah.
Someone call call the NFT, please. The good thing is the holder of that Quirky doesn't even know he holds it. He's just some farmer. So nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine.
No one's suing me.
But yeah. He just knows it as number Quirky 4579 or something like that.
My head does block most of the ones I don't own, though.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we've known you for a while. We had you, I think, originally on the Rug Radio show about a year ago. And you've kind of been tracking the NFT space better than anyone else for the last 12, 18 months. And then you obviously do this daily podcast, which has been, daily show, I would say, which has been incredibly successful with Proof. But yeah, we just thought it would be, you'd be the perfect person to kind of guide us through the bear market, which has just been down only since February. and just get what you think about all the trends going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was hearing you guys talk. You're like, we don't know what's going to make people money, so we got just the right guy to come on. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to make people money in NFTs right now. And I think, it was kind of, I thought it was pretty funny that NFT perp came out and they basically said the reason that they went bankrupt is because every single degen was short Azuki and they were on the other side.
Yeah, what happened with that? I need to hear more about that too.
I think that they're out, like, the way these things work is that they have what they call an insurance fund. And basically, if you can, clearly I don't understand it very well, so I'm stumbling, but like, you're not betting against another person, you're betting against the algorithm, and they try to like get the algorithm to get the price right. But if everybody's short Azuki and Azuki keeps going down, then there's really no one to pay people out. So they have what they call an insurance fund. And the goal, their business model, is hoping that the fees from trading will more than offset what the insurance fund loses. And at the end of the day, the insurance fund just lost too much money. And they said, we can't do this anymore because we are paying the other side of a one-way trade, which has been down only for 6 months. You know, now, interestingly, if like you can go to, there's a site called Tribe. And on Tribe, you can bet against floor prices. And right now, if you look at Tribe, they actually tell you what percentage of people are long versus short. And 100% of people are short Bored Ape Yacht Club right now. If you look at like D Gods, it's 50-50. But on Bored Ape Yacht Club, it's 100% of people are short who are trading. Jesus. So if you're going to go trade, they're only going to let you put on like half an ETH, right? So they've kind of done their risk management by limiting the amount of like notional that you can put onto the different trades. So it's kind of, it is... I don't know. I like to mess with everything. So I played around with NFT Perp and Tribe. The way that they also have a thing where basically if everyone's short, sort of like they'll make the shorts pay the longs a certain amount of money.
Like a funding rate.
Yeah, like a funding rate every 3 hours. But the problem is that that's actually going against their Oracle as opposed to against the long, against like the short long ratio. So if the price keeps going down, then shorts keep getting paid even if it's 100% short.
Because
they're not, it's not based, they're just trying to get you to go to the Oracle. They need you to get, they have no other mechanism to get the price to converge to where the actual floor price is, right? Like, so it's a weird business model. They put these, I mean, NFT Perp put out a 20 tweet thread yesterday. I probably understood about 7% of it, which was just enough for me to talk about on my show. But yeah,
it's a weird business model if it doesn't work and they close the business, is basically,
it's. It, you know, I will say this, the guys at Tribe like are the best guys in the space. Okay. Like I tweeted frustration with them because I was trying to close a position and it wouldn't let me. The CEO responded. We had a back and forth like for a long time. He explained everything to me and he refunded what I couldn't close because of, he said it was their fault because it was bad UI. When it was sort of my fault because I didn't have enough money for gas in my wallet. And he's like, well, we need to tell you that. You shouldn't have to push close 20 times without that. And most people would be like, you idiot. You know, you didn't know you had to pay gas. And he was like, this is our fault. And he refunded me a whopping 0.1 ETH.
There you go.
Let's go.
So other than shorting NFTs, yeah, but maybe we'll go with your journey so far. Like, how did you get into the space? You obviously... You started just on your own and then you joined Proof, but like, yeah, what were you doing before? What first got you into NFTs and when did you become the stats guy?
Yeah, so my career, I guess this is the third part of my career. The first part was at Goldman Sachs. I worked in like sales trading in San Francisco for 2 years. I'm 41, so that was 2004 to 2006. I didn't even own a suit. Literally had to stop at Men's Warehouse on the way to the interview. So I was very much a fish out of water when I started at Goldman Sachs, but kind of got more comfortable as time went on. And in 2006, I got a job in Asia. And at age 24, I became the head of Asia derivative research. Even though I knew nothing about Asia, I knew nothing about derivatives, and knew nothing about research. I just had a boss who, for some reason, decided to hire me. And that was like an amazing 6 years because my boss and I we'd write reports together. And it's not that hard to learn these markets if you're, you know, kind of fully... dive, like I was fully focused on it 12 hours a day. You know, I was 24. You know, it was just kind of what I cared about. And so I was like an amazing 6 years, traveled around the world, talked to hedge funds, like learned a lot about financial markets. But kind of got to this place where like research was just not the right fit for me. Like sitting in a cube was not what I wanted to do. And I wasn't like the people around me. Like the people around me were like very studious. And like, you know, we were literally writing 25 page reports and I had to drink so much coffee just to like get any of that done. So I left and I joined Uber. And that was definitely the luckiest move of my life because one of my clients at Goldman Sachs, one of his secretaries or assistants became a friend of mine. We would just chat a lot because we were always organizing stuff together. And I was chatting with her when I was ready to leave Goldman. And she said, oh, you should, you want to leave Goldman, you should come join Uber. And I had no idea what Uber was. So I was like, no, thank you. And then a month later, I like heard about it again. And I pinged her. I said, hey, if you're still up, she's like, yeah, I'll put you in touch with my boss. And her boss was Travis Kalanick. So she connected me with him, talked to Travis, talked to Ryan, joined the company. There were 35 people at the company and got this job launching Uber all over the world. So it was the first employee in London and then Amsterdam, Singapore, China. So that was cool. And I worked there for 7 years. Loved that too. So I'm one of the only people who left Goldman Sachs and has only good things to say about it. And I left Uber and eventually in 2018. And just that was an incredible experience. And I guess when it came to crypto, I think it was that I had a few friends who were from the Goldman days, who were like pretty good at macro. They're like pretty, this was like in 2000 or 2021. These guys were pretty good macro guys, pretty good just hedge fund guys. A couple of them still worked at Goldman. And like three people in a row told me to buy CryptoPunk. And I thought it was ridiculous because I've never been that into crypto. And it just, the whole concept made no sense. And then when a fourth person mentioned it, I was like, fuck, I started getting the FOMO. I started wanting to buy one. So I looked around and I kind of tracked them for like 6 months, and eventually kind of the price went just high enough that I would buy one, you know, and lose a ton of money. But, you know, so when I was trying to buy though, there was no chart available for floor prices. You literally could not find a chart. You could see where sales were, but for CryptoPunks, like where the sales are doesn't really tell you that much, because maybe it's a hoodie that's selling. You know, it's not like a good macro stat where the sales are. And
yeah, we had Zeneca on this chat like a couple of weeks back, and I remember he used to be like the floor prices, like
yeah,
collections.
Exactly.
Like, that's all you got.
So I built these charts with floor prices. I started tweeting them, and you know, and eventually I just started finding, like, I consistently started tweeting punk data. And eventually that started to catch on. And then all the punks started to follow me, because I would tweet every day which traits were going up and down. And then I bought an ape, and I did like punk ape stats was my name. And over time just started to realize that you have a lot of data people in this space, like people, and I'm in a bunch of like Telegram groups with like true data people, but, and then you have a bunch of traders in the space and collectors, but you don't have that many like data people who are also collectors. And I'm not a great data person. I'm not a statistician, right? Like I don't have any master's degree in stats or PhD. I've played with SQL a lot. I've always enjoyed math. I did research at Goldman Sachs. I have experience with kind of like just how to look at investments, and over time just built out this account and kind of found a little niche in being like a person talking about stats and NFTs.
So you were still working at Uber when you started?
No, I left Uber in 2018. So
okay.
At Uber, like when you're at a Silicon Valley startup, there's basic, if you're really early, there's no reason to stay longer than 4 years, because you get all your equity. And then the you know, if you're early enough, like the value's gone up enough that they can't really give you more equity that moves the needle for you. So what Uber did was in the next 2 years, they bought back our equity. So we could sell 15% back to the company and actually get liquidity. And they were buying it at like $35, $60 a share. Right now the share it's $50 a share, but like for most of the past 5 years, like most of the public time, it's been below 30. So like 6 years ago, we were selling back to the company for $35, $60, which is above where it was trading in the public market. So I stayed for 2 more years. I did. I was actually the head of photography for those 2 years, which was just like, I was like, there's no reason to get promoted anymore. Like I've already
got photography at Uber.
At Uber, yeah, yeah.
What is that?
That was like the best job ever. I basically traveled around the world, took photos of drivers. Like there actually was kind of an interesting problem, because Uber was spending over $1 billion on advertising. Like we burned so much money, it was absurd. And most of it was on growth advertising. And we were into like 50 countries, but you'd like go to Malaysia and there'd be a picture of like a white person in LA on the advertisement on Facebook saying, come drive for Uber. And then you'd see like a white person in LA and you're sitting in Kuala Lumpur and you're like, this person looks nothing like me. I don't even know if this was meant for me. So my job was kind of building out a full library of photography that pretty much everybody had pictures that represented the demographic that they were catering towards. And then I did a lot of like storytelling. Like everyone hated Uber at that time. Like we were public enemy number one, I think, in 2018. And at Goldman, we were public enemy number one in 2008. So I'm hoping that proof never becomes public enemy number one. I mean, I think we've become enemy number one of certain groups, but not public. So I did a lot of like storytelling, trying to tell driver stories, taking photos of drivers around the world, stuff like that.
That's cool. So yeah, that seems like a very niche group way in. Like, sounds like you had a bunch of people on the Gary Vee call that you knew, who then eventually got it to you that you need to buy CryptoPunk. You end up buying a pink head, which I think was kind of rogue, like a strange first buy. Like what made you, did you, as a stats person, were you like, oh, these all look cheap, like,
or not at all, dude? No, not first of all, the pink hair is like the sixth one I bought. So I'm like, punk 9059 is actually a male punk, which was the first one I bought. And I bought that was my PFP. I kind of switched PFPs a lot. And then I was talking to my wife about what she would want. If she ever wanted a punk or an NFT, is there anything you like? And this was when, like, you know, there are 30,000 people buying NFTs a day and times were different. And she was like, I guess the pink hair are kind of cool. So I bought one pink hair. which I bought from Pranksy back when Pranksy was like dumping. He had all these awesome female punks. And I bought one from him. And like I bought it for like 130, and like the price kind of went down like 50% pretty quickly, but I listed it for 168, and I woke up one morning and someone bought it. It was just like one of those outlier luck. I was like, fuck, I've lost so much money on this 135 ETH punk. And then someone bought it for 168. They bought that in a hoodie. So then I don't know, like I kind of missed it though. So like 6 months later when Yuga bought punks, there was like one, this pink hair listed for, it was like 110 ETH. I mean, it's still compared to now, it was a stupid buy, but I bought that. And that's kind of been my PFP since then.
I like the pink hair punk though. Well, I mean, there's been some sort of discussion about the people's favorite trait. What would you say yours is right now?
I like pink hair and tiara. I'm kind of like back in the day, I feel like the OG guys liked the female traits because they were rare. They're a bit more unique. And then there was this whole wave where it was only Bored Ape Yacht Club owners that were buying CryptoPunks because apes flip punks. Like apes literally went from being 150 at the price of punks to flipping them in 1 year. And it kind of became like this, it had a bit more of a fratty feel where there was nothing better than like a clean white male. And I kind of like in that moment where everyone wanted like the males, I kind of wanted to have like a female punk just to like not be that rush towards the kind of aggro punks. So.
Yeah, I kind of like the female punks too, like the white hair one.
They have some of the
striking. I don't know, they just look better for some reason.
Yeah, do you guys, KBM, do you know Brian Rast? He's a poker player.
Yeah, of course. But I know Brian Rast. Yeah.
Okay, so he was in my class in college, right? And I kind of lived with a few of those poker guys, and
yeah.
His whole thesis was like all female punks. Yeah, and he has a little fun with like 20 very unique female punks. And it was more kind of back when there weren't that many PFPs out there. It was all like it was kind of punks or nothing in the PFP space. And he was like, eventually women are gonna want to own cool punks too. And he just went all in on female punks. So hasn't really played out.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I don't know the what's the female to male ratio we got going here. But that's a long-term play for him.
Yeah, it's like 33% CryptoPunks are female, but like 3% of DGens are female. So he's still still needs to 10x just to get back to par there.
Yeah, how do we get more females involved? I don't know yet.
It's rough.
Shillum CryptoPunks are over 100 ETH for female ones, I think is the first way.
World of Women was the big hope once, and then here we are now.
But I feel like that was still all males speculating on it.
Yeah, exactly. I had like nine World of Women's.
So let's maybe get into that a little bit. So like you obviously became one of the first, I say you're a stats person, like you said, you don't really have a stats background, but you clearly had a research background. You understood that this should be driven by trends. And what are the main things you've seen over the last, maybe like what were the first ways to make money, and then how do you think is it developed now? Is there any way to make money, you think, in NFTs at the moment, or what do you think is the who do you think are the smartest people and how they make money, basically?
Those are a lot of questions. Look, I mean, I think that if you look at it, there's an interesting chart that I've posted a few times, which is like with every, I looked at every sale that someone made on secondary and looked at it, and looked at what they bought that NFT for. So every single sale, did you make or lose money? And until like May of 2022, people were making tons of money. Like it was literally every day, every sale, like the cumulative sales being made in NFTs was like, it was like tens of million dollars a day. Like it was wild how much from the punks run up, you know, it was really the summer of 2021. And then from May on, it completely flipped. And now like literally 28 days a month, 29 days a month, it's people losing money in NFTs. So I kind of feel like with this space, you have to be, and I'm sure this is true across the crypto complex in general, you want to be there when money is coming in. And when money is coming out, it is a very tough game. And I feel like unless you have like, I feel like insider information, or unless you're doing some project where you can get a bunch of people to pay 0.08 ETH for your project because you can sell a dream for a week. I mean, like if you look at Fat Zuki, like the team at Fat Zuki made 150 grand. Like you're seeing people who are making money in some of these projects. I think that's just like in a broad picture as an outsider, it gets very, very hard. If I look at the guys who are making money, like Cyrus is one of those guys who just makes money through thick and thin. And he does it because he knows collections as well as anybody. Like he knows who the buyers and who the sellers are. And even in this market, you're going to get some, like, even in this market, there are people out there who care about Grail D gods, for example, mm-hmm. or who are going to buy like a mid tier D god. And then most of the people, I mean, Grails are different, but like most of the people who own some of these mid tier traits are still going to dump them. Like, cause the easiest way to get liquidity, and people don't have patience and don't want to go into Telegram and don't want to have seven scammers try to get them to trade NFTs with them before they find the right person. Like they just don't want to deal with that. So someone who's comfortable in that space, like Cyrus studied mutant apes like 6 hours a day for a month before he traded a single one. So if he sees something on the floor that shouldn't be there, and he knows I can go to this Discord group and find someone who will pay more for this, cause I talk to these guys a lot. Like he'll cross that barrier a lot. So he makes money doing that. Like he's deep in the lending space. I guess the big picture way to make money is to find people who are in distress. You know, like is someone who took a big loan out just needs liquidity and will take anything so they don't have to shop around a bunch of like mid-tier Bored Apes. And he's the kind of guy who will go in and put those trades on. So I still see people doing that. I feel like every now and then, like I did a lot of Blur lending. I thought like I did Blur lending for a while. It no longer makes any sense because I think they've adjusted it. But I got like 9,000 Blur points and didn't even put a single ETH at risk. Like every now and then you just get opportunities in this space where if you're paying enough attention, like you can put on like pretty low risk trades. But what's clear is that, I mean, I tweeted this a couple of days ago, like the large cap index, the mid cap index, they're down like 70% in the past 6 to 7 months. So when you're trading kind of like the high pace stuff, like, you know, the PFP stuff, like the trend is not your friend here.
It's interesting that you said the first thing, which is about cost base, because a lot of people mention that in things like Bitcoin and ETH. They always look at the average cost base of short-term buyers and average cost base of long-term buyers. And that's another way to like track the trend of the market. So for example, like this recent period where Bitcoin's kind of just gone sideways for a long period, as people have said, it's just because the average short-term buyer was massively in profit for a while, kind of the highest. So even with positive news, it could never really move higher. It kind of feels like that's where NFTs can get to too. Like it's, if you think about it in those sort of terms, when the average user is always making money, then it's kind of a good time to start selling.
Well, at some level, yes. But like, I think you can come up with all sorts of these rules, but the fact is like that goes against the idea of like this being a momentum asset, which we know is true, right? Like what I've found in this space is like, there is a momentum play here, and we've had negative momentum for 7 months, but like when the momentum is positive, like I don't find that things crash immediately. Like it is a little bit different in that sense. I think like, you know, when it comes to equities, like, so I did vol markets, and when I say I'm not a statistician, I just mean, I haven't like studied it, but I spent a ton of time like digging into Uber's SQL database and digging into like data for equities and for options. I have spent a lot of time with data, but you know, clearly with options markets, you know, as you know, there's a concept called skew, which is basically that put options trade at a much higher implied volatility than call options. And the reasoning is because when most traditional assets crash, they crash really, really quickly. And when they go higher, they grind higher. But in NFTs, if you go all the way back to like 2021, they tend to crash higher. Like you just get this FOMO on moment, you know, Guy Osiri joins World of Women. It goes from 2 to 6 ETH in one day, you know, Bored Ape Yacht Club, you know, fuck it, Mutant Monday or you know, whatever it was. And Bored Apes pump higher. And there are very few examples actually in NFTs of prices really crashing. Other than I think the two Azuki crashes are the only ones I can think of where they actually legitimately like in 3 days crashed, you know, the Zagabend doxing as well as Elementals. But the normal trend is that people list a little bit lower, no one buys, they list a little bit lower, no one buys, like you need to get out, you dump it into a WEETH bid. But like even before Blur, you know, still like if you need it out, you just, the bids were basically there just to catch people who were willing to sell 10% lower, and then the buyer would sell 2% lower. And, you know, so I think broadly speaking, I think like playing momentum, knowing when money's coming into space, like you have time to get out. You know, it's not like you wake up one morning and some shitcoin is down 70, you know, and bald basically went from 100 million to 3. I feel like that's a little bit less the case with NFTs.
I mean, and that's just a function of float and liquidity, I would assume, because like 10,000 or 20,000 units is a super low float in a real life capital market situation. So sure. When people are buying it and FOMOing into it, definitely creates some crazy parabolic moves to the upside. Whereas like at the downside, it's a little bit harder to create those, even in like a low float stock. Like it takes a little bit longer to come down, but to go up, things can get fucking crazy. And 10,000 units is not much.
Yeah. No, I think, and that's definitely true. You know, it's, you can clear that floor pretty quickly, but
yeah,
people also don't, it's kind of a weird concept, this idea of are you up or down? Cause it doesn't matter. Right. Like if you like, it's just when I say it doesn't matter, it's like you should buy if it's going up and you should sell if it's going down. And if you bought higher, lower is irrelevant. Right. Like that's just some random data point. But it is one of those kind of irrational things that people peg themselves to. You know, one of the analysis I did was even like now in the Blur era, and I say the Blur era because 90% of PFP trading is on Blur, and Blur has entirely changed the technical dynamics of the game. But you know, even in the Blur era, right? Like people who are up, if you're selling when you're up, the median person had held for 2 days. If you're selling when you're down, the median person had held for 18 days. You know, so people just kind of go into hopium mode when they're down, and are less likely to sell. You know, versus when you're up. You know, you just want to, like right now, people just want to take those profits now. And I think one of the hard things that the market struggles with right now is that the one lesson people have is like, I should have taken profits. Like that's the one thing on everyone's mind.
Yeah.
So right now when anyone has profits to take, they take them. Whereas it used to be like the one lesson was never fade Yuga. Like that was the lesson of 2021, you know, never fade Yuga. So I just feel like the cliches that we're wedded to are different now.
Yeah.
It's like how that. Those tie in. To what like the market dynamic was at the time. It's like, don't fade Yuga when there's like a raging bull market, but take profits before you get into like a really big bear market. I think one thing is people just get so like absorbed into like the micro of the NFTs that they're trading and flipping every single day, just forget the bigger picture. And you can only really like learn from that for the next time, I think, but everyone got sucked into it to some extent or another.
Yeah, I always say hindsight capital management is undefeated.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, yeah, I feel like that's a lot of the cliches revolve around that.
So I guess the follow-on question then is like, what are the rules right now you think that are working? Like, what are the rules of this market? What you're saying, like, and in that options, basically the thing to do here is like sell puts, right? That's what the lending market is. You're just earning a premium. You're earning some sort of reward for getting hit on a down day for some, and your risk is you get hit on like a Azuki down day, for example, something like that. That seems like an interesting ploy, and there's clearly money to be made in that bit of the market. Are there any other rules right now you think that are consistent?
I think the Blur lending is actually really interesting. And the reason for that is like on CryptoPunks right now, let's see on Punks, like, I don't think lending's ever that interesting to a degen, because like on a good month as a lender, you make 5%, and like degens want to make like 5% in an hour. So there's something structural about lending that I think feels off. It's kind of weird seeing these degens get into it, but there is something about like the dopamine hit of seeing the interest you're earning. And what one thing that Blur is incredible at is dopamine hits. Like literally they walk you higher with the amount of interest you've earned from 0.0001. Like when you burn 0.001 ETH, Blur is telling you. So you kind of want that. You're like, and then you're like, oh fuck, I just made 0.05 ETH, and you're excited about it because they're very good at like getting. But like, you know, right now there are loans where like, one just went out today for 43.9 ETH on a punk, which is below the bid, but that's at like 160% APY. You know, like on DGod, you can do loans at like 7 ETH for like 20-25% APY. And the reason I think Blend is so good for lenders is because you can unroll it at any moment. So basically all you're betting on is that like DGods aren't going to crash by 20% in literally 26 hours or 30 hours. And we've seen that bidders come in and cushion downside moves. So I think the risk reward on lending, when you can, now the problem is people are discovering this, so it's getting harder. But I think, yeah, because the downsides are so cushioned, like it's just not that likely that any of these NFTs are going to go down 20%. And like the elementals dump, like that, like, anybody who knows volatility could have seen that there was risk there, right? Like, you could have just, what I did, I just took off all loans ahead of the elementals thing in just 24 hours ahead of time. I just took everything off. I'll wait 24 hours because you don't get that rewarded for being right in lending. And then after it was over, like, you're probably not going to have another like gap event. So I think like lending is kind of interesting. Sometimes I put a little money to work there. It's just, there's not, the problem is the market's figuring that out. You know, it used to be like you could get 30% APY, 20% below floor on these things. And right now you can't because people are filling in there. But I don't know. I mean, I've talked about this before, like, you know, and I know KBM might disagree, but like I've generally thought that incentivized bidding has like very counterintuitively proven to be a really big headwind for projects. So I think with incentivized bidding, I personally, like, I try to wait till they move off the incentivized bidding radar screen before I want to get involved. I think it ends up becoming a problem. So that's just kind of one of my rules. It's, you know, with my Azukis, I own two Azukis because I saw how much of a status symbol they were in Asia. And I sold them both for like 13.2 ETH because I was like, you know, I don't think NFTs can do well with incentivized bidding. And then the floor ran to 17 ETH. Like, I sold them 3 months early and they ran to 17 ETH because, you know, everyone pumped them ahead of this event and then they crashed for a different reason. So I'm not always right, but I think.
You didn't want to FOMO in at 17 though? Is that a rule as well?
My rule is I don't buy stuff where incentivized bidding is happening. I just think at the end of the day, everything, I just feel like there's overall a supply transfer to people who will sell very quickly. And those people who will sell quickly are going to keep bidding higher and higher and higher until the real holders like would be stupid not to sell. And then you just get this mad transfer to people who are quick to dump. They're basically getting paid to convert NFTs to the hands of sellers. And it facilitates a transfer to people who are going to sell quickly. And we've seen it, you know, ever since it started, we're celebrating that DGods are flat. You know, DGods started at 90, they're at 90. And everyone's like, no, it's like, it's not necessarily bad. Look at DGods. I'm like, isn't the only thing that matters? Like, clearly you can do well with incentivized bidding. I mean, Azuki, I sold at 13, then they went up to 17 ETH. Like, clearly there's more at play. But overall, I think it's a headwind. And this is the opposite of what I expected. If you would have told me 5 months ago that Blur is going to pay people $1 million a day to bid on NFTs, just like, I thought this, you got to buy. And it's, and I said that on podcasts, and I said before Punks went on to Blur, because that was a month later. I said on podcasts that this is going to be probably neutral to positive for Punks. And in the end of the day, you just saw that the bidders keep bidding higher and higher until people are stupid not to sell holders. And then after they sell, it's like someone takes those NFTs and dumps them in a pit. And then the next seller says, okay, should I buy one from the pit or should I add to the pit? And it's like, well, as long as that pit's there with 100 NFTs, you'd be a complete moron to buy. And they're getting paid to buy yours and add it to the pit. So of course you're going to be, all right, I'm going to take advantage of that. And it just snowballs and compounds on itself. And like with your NFTs, when I looked at the apes that you guys sold, they actually didn't get bought. The real buyers for the last 20% didn't get bought for 4 months.
Dude, I looked at some of the apes that we sold because when they went down to 28, I started to look at that first dip down to 20. I know they're around that area now, but that first dip down, I was like, I put in the chat with Ovin and Farouk. I was like, I think this is the bottom for apes. I started looking at the floor and I was like, I'm sure some of these are our apes. And like, they had been transferred like 30 times in that
period. Most was over 50, and 15 of them didn't actually get bought, didn't actually get held for more than like a couple weeks until June.
I couldn't actually, like, I had to scroll through the OpenSea history for like, it was like 3 pages long before I could see where we had actually sold them, which was, I just thought was wild. But look, I agree with that sentiment. It's a complex, it's a multivariate problem, I think, in NFTs at the moment, for a statistician. But I think, look, if the top Blur farmers are all down in money, the only reason they're still Blur farming is because they're hoping to get the airdrop, right? And that just tells you that the incentive, like, they don't mind if they lose money as long as they get the airdrop. So there is that.
It's extremely addictive. Like I said, I'm an airdrop farmer myself, right? And so I'm quite close to it. I'm in the discords with the guys who do it, and it is extremely addictive. Like, those guys are very good at getting people hooked on this stuff. And I think the last payday was season one, where people made so much money. So it's extremely addictive. And I think, you know, like I said, I think with bidding, you're fighting a losing game because NFTs are trending lower, and there's a lot of PvP where unless you're the biggest guy, you could get dumped on. But with lending, I made 8,500 points. And I think even in a bear case scenario, points are worth like $1 each. In a bull case, they're like $3 each. So that's like $8,000 or $9,000. And I didn't take any risk. So I think there's still a case for playing by some of these rules. You know, it's just at the end of the day, I think it's a big headwind for floor prices, which I found surprising. And then if you look at punks right now, like punks don't have a lot of farming anymore. Like they're low volume, like the community's kind of moved on from them, but you just kind of have this overhang and the gusto and like the excitement has been taken out. So it's not like when this ends, everything's going to pump. You know, like you still have a lot of people who have a lot of very short-term players who are stuffed with a lot of supply. Like right now there's a Clone X holder, Armor, who owns 300 Clone X. Like he's eventually going to sell them. This guy, he did the same thing on Beans. He did the same thing on Opepin. We know this guy's end game is zero. So you have someone who's going to sell 300. Like it's not like the ending of farming. I don't know. I think like when farming ends or when the incentives end, like it's still going to be rough. Because you just have too much supply that's kind of in these guys' hands, and the mojo and NFTs like are worthwhile when they're going up and when they're a status symbol and when you're proud to have it. But it's a very fragile asset class. Like right now, if you have like an Azuki PFP, does that mean you're a sucker? Like, I mean, I'm sure there are some people who are like, "This is awesome. I want to be part of this." But to most people, it's like the main purpose of owning it is like you own this thing that's going up. And that use case has lost a lot of its mojo here.
Yeah. How do you feel about the valuations of all these things? Do you think they're appropriate or do you think they're sustainable in the future? Just as like profile picks, you think like,
I think
it's just a valuation on community, obviously, or like what's
I mean, there is no valuation, right? Like it's like these are like, and that's true for all collectibles, right? Like why is a diamond ring worth $70,000? Because De Beers did some crazy marketing but that price has maintained its value for a long time. I mean, clearly in a world where there are like 3,000 unique buyers a day and there are 10,000, you know, doodles, moonbirds, clone, you know, 20,000 clones, like clearly like that there were some aspects that were in great shape. But I think with like CryptoPunks, I think is the one that's most interesting to look at because they've been around for over 6 years. They've been kind of at this price point for over 2 years at this point. Like the collection has a lot of the collection has turned to people who like CryptoPunks, and valuation's just so hard to measure. You know, it's supply demand based valuation,
right?
You know, it's not like it's the opposite of like an X supply demand curve. But I think for a lot of this stuff, what's clear is that the valuations, I don't know, it's like there is, like I said, there it's like any collectible. It's like a baseball card, a bottle of wine. The valuation is based on people's perception of supply and demand. That's it. And I think we've seen in enough collectibles that that's not a use case that goes to zero. Otherwise, you know, Rolex watches wouldn't be worth anything because an Apple Watch tells the time better than a Rolex watch, but people like that brand value and that feeling of connection they have. So I think some NFTs will survive that, but I mean, the past 6 months have shown that it's an extremely fragile use case, and that when you have no cash flows from a valuation, like, you know, it's very hard to stop a downward spiral.
So out of the NFTs, the major NFTs out there, maybe just put it a different way, like which ones do you think look good from a statistical perspective? Like, is it just punks right now, or which of things are coming out the other side of this bear market the best?
I think you kind of got to look at like what has enough of a story that it's going to be worth something in 3 years. And I'm not a trader. Like I'm not a flipper. I don't buy and sell a lot of NFTs. I'm from a different mindset than I think a lot of your audience and a lot of your guests who are really out there like waking up looking for like what's the trade I put on today. Like I don't really put on that many trades, but like, you know, I mean, I think like a Chromie Squiggle as the first generative art project, like I think that there's something about that like kind of could stand the test of time. Yeah. I think the Fidenza story, I think they're beautiful and cool, and I think they're interesting. Like I don't know if they have quite as great of a story as like the Squiggle, where it was the very first project. Mm-hmm. I think punks have an interesting story. I think V1 punks, like maybe there's a narrative that can get spun up there, even though I hate V1 punks. I still own two, but like, I don't love what they've done to the CryptoPunk narrative. But I think that those are kind of interesting. I think like what I'm looking at more is like, what are the things that like remain interesting? What are the people who've created enough story? And I actually thought for a while that maybe Bored Ape Yacht Club did. I was thinking like Bored Ape Yacht Club going from $300 to $600,000 over a year and a half is one of the more interesting things that I'd ever seen, you know, and I thought that could become like a case study in business school. And like over time, it's like, holy shit, you own one of those things. But I think that is starting to get a little bit more fragile. And I actually thought the same thing for Azuki. I thought there was a chance that Azuki would be like the status symbol for like people who live in Asia. Like I saw so many people in Asia who were like it was just like this thing to flex. And I saw so many people who believe that. And I was like, maybe this, and then clearly we saw how fragile it is. It's like no longer a status symbol.
How do they fumble that one? Yeah, that was a interesting play by them. Like the fragility of Bored Apes, like you were talking about. It's like, I mean, they had the airdrops, which made a lot of the holders more wealthy, which obviously makes people more happy. Then once you dilute it so much, obviously things get, you know, diminishing returns on that front. So now they're making a game. I mean, like, what's next for that? How do you create more value after that? I mean, creating a game and a metaverse game itself is, I don't think there's been a good one since World of Warcraft. And I think a lot of people have tried with a lot.
Yeah, the gaming use case like feels like, it feels like such a stretch. I mean, I think I love Frank, by the way. And I'm curious how long Frank can keep this going with D-Gods. Like what I love about Frank is that he just gets like this. He said on the podcast yesterday, he goes, utility doesn't matter. The tech doesn't matter. What matters is that people own these things, feel good about it and feel valued and want to be part of it and feel FOMO. Like that's what matters. And it was kind of and I think when you look at Bored Apes, like the glory days were when was when Gordon Gonner would jump into the Discord and be like, fuck it, like Mutant Monday or whatever, you know? And like, that was it. It was like these founders who built this thing. And I think part of the appeal of crypto and NFTs, I think is almost like, people like being part of this thing that's ridiculous. It's like you like owning this thing that your economics professor says is the stupidest thing ever. It's kind of like, well, I own it now and I'm up 20x. Like
it's a protest investment, isn't it? It's like the whole
Matt and John of CryptoPunk said the whole point of this is that it's stupid. Like they're like, the whole point of that is that it's stupid and it's making money. And I think when these projects convert into something like a game, and you're like, yeah, hey, I'm paying about $1,200 for a piece of land of a game that's never been built, and there are 100,000 of them. Then it's like ridiculous. You're moving away from that use case of like, I am part of something. We are in it. Like, it feels awesome to be part of this. I love this profile picture, and I love Gordon coming in and just like mic dropping in the Discord. Like, that was really the glory days that got to the prices. And I think as you get to these more tangible use cases, the prices feel a little bit weirder at some level.
Yeah, maybe it just wasn't as scalable as people thought, and the corporations and VCs tried to help scale it up, and that just kind of, made everything a little less appealing to the people who were involved originally, and made it, I don't know, just made it worse.
Well, it leads to like the owners having more stakeholders, you know, when like with Gordon's, like all I care about is my holders, that's it. And at some level, it's kind of one of the good things about royalties was like, you know, and I see goods and bads to the way royalties have been used in this industry, but there was something about it where like through the royalties, you made money. Oh shit. My camera just came in. Through the royalties, you made money. And like, you could kind of work with like when it was done right. And I think Bored Ape, like you could be there, like there was a little bit of a barrier to entry to buying because of the royalties and fees. It was a more meaningful purchase. When you did, the team made money so they could keep working with you. But once you started getting more and more stakeholders involved, I think the model becomes a lot more confusing. It's a very confusing model. As someone who's like used to like shareholder focus, like the share and someone who kind of understands collectibles, like blending the two is difficult.
Yeah, it does seem like it's been an impossible task for most of these companies so far. I guess that is funny. The royalties, once those exited and became a little bit more corporate based, did change a lot of things, but I mean, like, I guess that's just the way it is now, especially with Blur and just how efficient capital markets, which it's kind of turned into. That's just the route it went, and here we are now. So I'm interested to see what kind of innovations can come next from it. I mean, obviously there's going to be something that someone innovates and fixes some of these problems, but I don't know yet what it is.
I did feel like royalties was the innovation. But I felt like that was like, that's what made these, like, that's what made the businesses work, even though they were poorly run businesses to a large extent. Like, that's the only way it made it work. And now, I mean, you look at the stats and I'm like, is anyone making any money?
No.
I mean, one of the shocking things, like, because I came in as a crypto punk, right? And I was, and the minute I started learning about royalties, I was like, this doesn't work. Like, why would people buy a Bored Ape and pay 2.5%? And I started to like really research royalties. And for the first, like from middle of 2021 to middle of 2022, no one cared about royalties. Like buyers did not care. Buyers were, you know, and that, you know, in the summer of 2021, it, like apes were 2.5%, you know, Kennel Club was 0%. And then over time, you know, Doodles, Azuki, like everything popped off with 5%. Mm-hmm. And Bored Ape Yakla or Yuga went to 5% for Other Deed because they're like, clearly no one gives a shit. Like, we're just going to charge 5%. Yeah. And it was the opposite. Like, one would expect, like, the economics student would expect that over time royalties would trend lower because buyers would become more sensitive and projects would align accordingly. But the opposite happened. Like, Goblins came out with 7%, you know, NFT Worlds did 10%, and no one cared. You know, and like that was kind of one interesting trend. But the other interesting trend is that as royalties have gone to zero, the market has been down only. Like, mm-hmm. and that I think is surprising. It is surprising at some level that it's like, yes, like there's a lot less friction on the trading side, but the whole use case that people were kind of in it for, of being part of this thing where you're in it yeah. with the team and growing, has kind of gotten fallen away. Or whatever your interpretation, you can interpret it however you want. But basically, royalties effectively went to zero in November. And since January, the market's been down only. I mean,
yeah.
Large cap index down 70%.
I think it was obviously a bubble. But but you're not wrong. Also, it was commoditized and then, you know, turned into something. It definitely changed and pivoted for where it was like community-based and people are happy to do certain things. Now it's just all coins with pictures, I think they call it. Shit coins with pictures, we can even say at some points here. But yeah, definitely. I don't know.
People are stuck with 10,000 too, you know, whereas in January, you could sell a 10, in January 2022, you could sell a 10,000. But in a market where there are only 4,000 unique buyers and unique buyer numbers are going down more and more, the buyers are becoming traders. Like, the only person who should be in this market is someone who really understands the trading dynamics. Otherwise, you're going to get wrecked. Like, if you don't know that someone owns 350 clones, who's going to dump them? Like, you're going to get wrecked. And the only people who know that are traders. So I feel like the buyer has increasingly transitioned to traders, the kind of longer term holders, and you need longer term holders to get exit liquidity for traders. And those guys have just been scared away a little bit.
Yep. Absolutely.
Man, we went down the grim path. I'm sorry, guys.
We did, yeah.
I kind of knew it was going to go that way.
I was hoping it wouldn't. I was hoping, because I do love a good
discussion, though. It's different than what we usually have on Wrecked Radio. I don't know, Mando or OSF, do you guys have any questions real quick before we try to wrap it up? We're running out of time here, so I just want to see if anyone has
another question. I think we can wrap it. It's been a good conversation. I think it's useful to see where you think the trends are going to be. I agree, like, long-term values, I think will survive. It's a very tough market right now. I think the business model for the majority, like, if you came up with the idea for Bored Ape Yacht Club today, would you really do an NFT if you couldn't make any money from royalties from it? Like, it seems as though that model is, and that's what I know still existing, a large percentage of the universe is. So I still think we're in a tough period, but you pick those long-term value plays. I think they make sense. I think you've got to ask yourself, is this still going to be relevant in 10, 20 years? And if it's not, then it's a very, very tough market at the moment. And if I'm honest, it feels like a lot of people are moving on to just altcoins or meme coins because it's become maybe an easier way to kind of pump rather than NFTs, which don't really have that parabolic utility element to them.
I will end it though on a positive note, which is that I do think like the main use case of these things is like the flex, is like being part of something, is that online flex. It's like the Gucci handbags of Twitter. And I think the fact that Twitter's gotten weird also has really hurt NFTs as well. But I think that use case, like, I own two punks. I love my punks. And like, that's real. I'm not a gambler. I'm not into like the whole DJing game, but I love my punks. And if I feel that, I feel like this use case isn't going to go away. And I feel like people feeling connection to NFTs and communities and other stuff, like, is, and the use case that I was talking, like, one of the reasons I got really into NFTs is because I saw people using these as this like rebellious investment, like a way to dunk on your economics professor, a way to like show to your mom that you're like into something different than what she thinks is okay, and you're proud of that. And I always thought that NFTs are better at that than shitcoins. I think, like, all, because you can You're not only long the stuff, but it's your profile picture. It's the identity you're taking over. You can show it to people. You're not going to, like, some people do this, but you're not really just going to post your Pepe wallet balance. You look like an idiot. Like, you know, no one posts their bank account ever. Some people do, but like, that's not like, but having a PFP is like not even gauche. It's just like a normal thing to do. So I think like this use case,
low key flex,
yeah. And like the dopamine obsession, but like also just, if you were there in the bull market, you saw the way, like I've been in like discords where 28-year-old guys who made their money in crypto, like obsess over Bored Ape trades. And it's not like, and they're not sitting there like being like, oh, I can flip this. They're like, holy fuck, I love that ape. And like, I've seen that happen and that these actually serve as luxury items. So I think it'll happen again. I think the markets, I don't think this market's over. I don't think NFTs are like done. I've seen enough like real human behavior that I think this has stay power. I just think we're in a bad stretch here.
Yeah. Even if prices go up, down, there's some kind of equilibrium, a social equilibrium where, especially as you spend more and more time online, all of us, everyone wants to have the profile pic and be part of a community. And I think that's something special that NFTs definitely bring to the table as well. So we just want to close it out here with the last question that we ask everyone on the show. So what would be your best advice for people to not get wrecked?
Oh, my best advice for now. I mean, I think what you were saying at the beginning was super prescient, where you're like, when you're feeling long, go short. I feel like there is something about watching things go higher that people, you know, that people like get this FOMO. And I've just learned to ignore that. Like, I've just learned to like, I think the biggest thing about buying is you have to know if you're buying it, you should either know your exit price, be comfortable with it going to zero, or want to hold it for 5 years. And if you can't say which one of those it is, don't buy it. You know, like if you like, what's my thesis, like where I will sell. And if that thesis breaks, then you're wrong and sell anyway. Well, do I like this for 5 years, or am I comfortable with it going to zero? Like, I think if you can't answer those, then don't buy.
Yeah. I think especially in today's market, a lot of people go into these crazy high beta plays without plans, like buying these altcoins and shit like that. And then that's such an easy way to get burnt. So
yeah,
definitely don't FOMO is a good thing.